Chapter 10, Absolute Zero. The first sign of returning consciousness was cold, then sound. She was aware of voices that seemed to be traveling through her across an arctic waste. Slowly the icy sounds cleared, and she realized that the voices belonged to her father and Calvin. She did not hear Charles Wallace. She tried to open her eyes, but the lids would not move. She tried to sit up, but she could not stir. She struggled to turn over, to move her hands, her feet, but nothing happened. She knew that she had a body, but it was as lifeless as marble. She heard Calvin's frozen voice. "Her heart is beating so slowly." Her father's voice. "But it's beating. She's alive." "Barely. We couldn't find a heartbeat at all at first. We thought she was dead." "Yes." "And then we could feel her heart very faintly, the beats very far apart. And then it got stronger. So all we have to do is wait." Her father's words sounded brittle in her ears, as though they were being chipped out of ice. "Calvin." "Yes, you're right, sir." She wanted to call out to them, "I'm alive! I'm very much alive! Only I've been turned to stone!" But she could not call out any more than she could move. Calvin's voice again. "Anyhow, you got her away from it. You got us both away, and we couldn't have gone on holding out. It's so much more powerful and strong than... How did we stay out, sir? How did we manage as long as we did?" Her father. "Because it's completely unused to being refused. That's the only reason I could keep from being absorbed, too. No mind has tried to hold out against it for so many thousands of centuries that certain centers have become soft and atrophied through lack of use. If you hadn't come to me when you did, I'm not sure how much longer I would have lasted. I was on the point of giving in." Calvin. "Oh, no, sir." Her father. "Yes, nothing seemed important any more but rest. And, of course, it offered me complete rest. I had almost come to the conclusion that I was wrong to fight, that it was right after all, and everything I believed in most passionately was nothing but a madman's dream. But then you and Meg came into me, broke through my prison, and hope and faith returned." Calvin. "Sir, why were you on Kamazots at all? Was there a particular reason for going there?" Her father, with a frigid laugh. "Going to Kamazots was a complete accident. I never intended even to leave our own solar system. I was heading for Mars. Tessering is even more complicated than we had expected." Calvin. "Sir, how was it able to get Charles Wallace before it got Meg and me?" Her father. "From what you've told me, it's because Charles Wallace thought he could deliberately go into it and return. He trusted too much to his own strength. Listen, I think the heartbeat is getting stronger." His words no longer sounded to her quite as frozen. Was it his words that were ice, or her ears? Why did she hear only her father and Calvin? Why didn't Charles Wallace speak? Silence. A long silence. Then Calvin's voice again. "Can't we do anything? Can't we look for help? Do we just have to go on waiting?" Her father. "We can't leave her. And we must stay together. We must not be afraid to take time." Calvin. "You mean we were? We rushed into things on Kamazots too fast, and Charles Wallace rushed in too fast, and that's why he got caught?" "Maybe. I'm not sure. I don't know enough yet. Time is different on Kamazots anyhow. Our time, inadequate though it is, at least is straightforward. It may not be even fully one-dimensional, because it can't move back and forth on its line, only ahead. But at least it's consistent in its direction. Time on Kamazot seems to be inverted, turned in on itself. So I have no idea whether I was imprisoned in that column for centuries or only for minutes.